listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah, and today in studio with me, I have a co-host who's one of my longest and dearest friends, Holly Florin, who has been a psychotherapist who's not practicing now, and artist as well, yes?
Yeah, for some time. And thank you for inviting me. I'm really interested in this subject, and I have a lot of experience with befriending an ex, 30 years worth.
Yes, that will be our guest in a few moments. But I'm so glad Holly drove all the way out here from Palm Springs to hang out with me. I haven't seen you in 2 years.
Wow.
Right? Last
yeah,
time.
2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Time
mm-hmm.
flies.
Yeah, and we met at a, I think I was already licensed. I think so. I was like newly licensed.
I was licensed, and you and I both ended up at the same internship there for many others, and it was...
Yeah, a place called Penny Lane where
we
worked with some really tough teenagers. Boy, yeah. We learned how to have potty mouths, didn't we?
Well, I had one before, Deborah.
I think you did too. No,
you didn't.
Not that bad.
Oh.
No,
well.
No. I learned the F-bomb really well there.
Yeah.
Well, how do you relate to a gang child if you can't say the F word, right? And we can say it on here. We can say fuck as much as we want.
You can?
You can, yes. Because
good.
It's radio.
Well, you know, you just, I don't know. You don't have to use the F word. There's other ways, but you know. Yeah, you got to have the language.
But then once you win those little buggers' hearts, man, they are in your pocket forever. I remember one of the kids that I worked with, I saw him about 10 years later, and he recognized me coming out of a 7-Eleven. You'll remember him, Frankie, with the very long hair.
And
he ended up getting married. He had a baby. He had a real job. He was doing fantastic. And he goes, "You saved my life." It was so sweet.
One of the times I was in the hospital, I was very ill in it, and there were two of the gals who I had on my caseload, were doing volunteer work at the hospital, and they came in.
Oh,
it was extraordinary.
Awesome.
Mary and Christina.
I remember them.
Yeah.
They were in the girls' house.
Yes.
Oh, but terrible management. Remember when I asked for a raise and the lady had me talk to her in the car while she was...
Yes. I also remember you fought for it till you got it.
I did. Yes.
That's why I love having Deborah as a friend. A lot of good life skills.
Although the worst part about that place was the sexual harassment, which we'll talk about some other time.
Yeah.
That part was not good. But without further ado, first we have to do a shout out to Kelly because Miss Kelly is on a cruise with her family in the Caribbean. So she's just enjoying herself.
Poor thing.
And here we are, but we're going to have just as much fun as she is having.
Yeah.
So there, Kelly.
Yeah.
No, we miss you, Kelly. Love you so much. Okay, as Holly mentioned, today we have a fantastic author and a psychotherapist on our show, Judy Ruske. I hope we said that right. Might be Ruske. She'll tell us. Ravener. And she is a clinical psychologist, author, consultant, and psychotherapist with offices in New York City and Lido Beach, Long Island, where she works with individuals, groups, couples, and families. During an almost 40-year career, she developed specialties in first treating eating and body image disorders and later in working with divorcing families. Her two seemingly separate specialties are seamlessly woven together by her commitment to the power of relationship to heal. She's the author of dozens of articles, chapters, and 2 books, Befriending Your Ex After Divorce, Making Life Better for You, Your Kids, and Yes, Your Ex, and her earlier book on eating disorders called A Starving Madness, Tales of Hunger, Hope, and Healing in Psychotherapy. Oh, I love that. We're going to have to ask her about that, too.
Mm-hmm.
She blogs for the Huntington Post and Psychology Today, is a consultant to the Renfrew Center Foundation, a supervisor at the Center for the Study of Anorexia and Bulimia, and a sought-after presenter, workshop leader, and media expert. And she's currently working on a memoir about her mother. Welcome, Dr. Judy.
Welcome, Dr. Deborah and Holly.
It's
lovely
so nice
to be
so this
here,
came...
and we have so many things to talk about today.
I know,
yes.
And what was so fantastic is that you and I shared the same agent, I think, years ago when you were writing this book, and I was very honored to be asked to write a blurb for the book.
Yes, we were both published with New Harbinger, correct?
No, mine was, let's see, I had a smaller publisher, but... I don't remember at what time. Oh, no, wait a minute. I think it's when I had HarperCollins. Yep.
Oh, and I think that we had the same agent?
Yes.
Claire Garrett, correct?
Well, actually, it was Linda Connor.
Oh, Linda, because she was the publicist. That's right. Let's give a shout-out to Linda.
Let's give a shout-out to Linda.
Linda has brought us together. Terrific. Mm-hmm.
And I told her that you were going to be on the show today, so that's really exciting.
Oh, that's nice. I saw her when she was in New York last week. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And it's amazing that she's still, like, she's hot stuff there in New York.
Yeah, she was attending a conference, and we had a wonderful time getting together, reminiscing about the book world, the divorce world, and, well, divorce is still an epidemic.
It is.
Nothing's
so let's dive right in. Let's dive right in and talk about befriending your ex, but talk to us first about divorce.
Well, one thing we have to face, and everybody in the listening audience probably knows, that marriages are fragile. Marriages can end, but divorce is forever. If you have children, and that's what is key in my work, is working with families where there are children involved. Because when there are children involved, you are connected to the person you divorced for the rest of your life. And that's why it really pays to try to work out a relationship with that person that will benefit. You know, what most people think about is this is what the kids need. And I completely agree. That was what primarily motivated me to try to get along with my ex-husband when I got divorced, why I wrote a book. But what I really learned as the decades rolled on is that having a befriended ex is a treasure. It's a treasure because no one else really will ever share that part of your life with you. No one else will ever care about your children. Well, no one else may ever care about your children the way your ex did. And so that was the case in my situation, and that's why I wrote a book about this, to really help people overcome some of the ideas and beliefs that could hold them back and realize you can get along with your ex. If you couldn't stay married, it doesn't mean that you can't have a better relationship now that you're divorced.
Which is ever so
that
true.
That was mouthful.
Yeah, absolutely. And now Holly doesn't have children, but she is one of the wonderful mentors about befriending an ex because she is very, very, very close with her ex.
Yeah, we are best friends. I've known her now for 32 years. So,
well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's just been an extraordinary experience. And I'm sure a lot of what you have to talk about is that it's been extraordinary for me because we are so opposite. She's more of a quick-acting, extroverted sensation type. I'm an introvert and very intuitive, and I've really learned how to kind of meet myself halfway and build better boundaries and just an extraordinary support.
Yeah, you've been a great role model for that. And I also am a divorced person, and my ex, well, many exes, but not from marriage. Hopefully there won't be too many more. If Christopher's
right,
listening.
There are exes who we never married, and then there are exes who we married.
Right, but the one that I share a daughter with, that was a really big challenge, and boy, could he have used your book when we separated when my daughter was only 7 months old. So he was very, very, very angry, and it took, I would say, 5 years for us to cross that bridge where he finally sort of understood we weren't going to get back together, and that, you know, it's time to move on. And he ended up having a new relationship, which was awesome. And I really tried to encourage my daughter, who had ended up having a wonderful relationship with her. And, you know, we've always done outings together, trips together, family events together. And so it's really been beautiful for her. But boy, have I worked with so many couples like you have that just can't get over the, you know, spend $1,000 to argue over a $500 item in court to rack up a $500,000 attorney bills. It's crazy.
Yeah. I have a question. I mean, and I maybe, Dr. June, you can shed some light on this. You see, I've never had children being a lesbian. And so, of course, it's the same sort of stages I would assume we have to go through. But when you divorce and you have children, you can't take the time to have that stage where there's no contact.
Oh, right.
Well, yeah. You can't take what?
The time to have no contact. So
right.
How do you deal with that when you have your heart and your soul pulled in so many directions with the keeping good boundaries and keeping it together when you have kids?
Yeah, keeping it together in the early stages of divorce, I think, is really tricky for everyone. And Deborah, I'm really And you're right, because if there are no children, regardless of whether you're with somebody of the same sex or a different sex, when there are no children, that's fine. You can take a cooling off period, and you don't have to talk to that person for a year or two or more, and you can always go back to them. But when there are children, you have to have civilized conversations for the benefit of the children. And that certainly should be a primary motivator for most couples. The children really need two parents. And regardless of what's going on, you as a divorced parent or anybody out there in the listening audience, you don't know if you're going to get, you're going to hook up with somebody new, if your ex is going to hook up with someone new. The two biological parents that the child has, that child has the right to them. And how do you as a parent try to act respectful to somebody that you actually are feeling probably a mixture of angry, hurt, resentful, maybe even more negative feelings like disgusted with? Because to get divorced, you've really reached the end of your rope. Somebody or both people have reached the end of their rope. And now to maintain civilized communication is really difficult. And so one of the themes in my book is that what people really need to do is take the high road. They need to take the high road, and it's like you need to almost like tape a picture of your child on the front of the refrigerator and say to yourself, my ex and I are going to be at every graduation and every important event in this child's life for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to feel good about who I am. And I want to treat this person as respectfully as I can, and I want the same in return. And even just talking to yourself like that can kind of calm you down, because it's so easy for all the anger and resentment that is typical at the end of a marriage, when a marriage fails. It's typical for that to still be present. How do you put that aside and really keep your child's best interest in the front of your mind? That's the challenge to every divorcing parent, wouldn't you say, Deborah?
Absolutely. And you know, in line with what you're saying, maybe part of, in response to you, Holly, part of the cooling off that is can be a really valuable part in a breakup is that you define really specific content areas that the two of you will discuss and actually lay off the rest until you have softer and kinder feelings toward one another. Would you say that is a good tool?
Well, absolutely. And another important thing, laying off of the conflict areas, and really, I think the way we reduce suffering in our own lives and in other people's lives is by being compassionate. And
of course,
the thing is, when you're married, if your husband or wife comes home a half hour late, you don't go throw a fit. But when you're getting divorced, or you're divorced and your ex comes a half hour late or drops the kids off a half hour late, we live in a culture where people think they have the right to be angry and bitter and say all sorts of things. And look, Deborah and Holly, we know now that who does anger and bitterness hurt the most? It hurts the person who feels it. We damage ourselves by holding on to anger and all these negative feelings. So figuring out how to minimize that strain and stress on yourself is really crucial.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My favorite saying as you're speaking is, resentment is like swallowing poison and waiting for the other guy to die.
Yeah, that's a good saying.
Exactly. Swallowing poison and waiting for the other guy to die. A woman was sitting in my office last week, and she was talking about how her husband drank too much and blah, 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 and he was with the kids. And I said, well, did you ever drink too much when you were married? She said, yeah. I said, and how did you behave? She said, that's the funny thing. If he drank too much, I would say to the kids, oh, daddy had too much to drink. Now, if he drinks too much, and she realized, just me asking her that question, how did you deal with this behavior when you were married? And how are you responding to this behavior now? And you're not going to change your ex. If you couldn't change your ex in the years you were married, you're probably not going to change your ex now.
So true.
But you still have a responsibility to think, what is the impact of how I'm behaving and what I'm saying on my children? And most people really want their children to grow up and be as strong and well put together as they can be. And even though we know these children no good for people to mouth off about their ex in front of the kids, there are many people who will say and have said in my office, I want to check this out with you. They'll say, I couldn't help it. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that too? I couldn't help it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a level of entitlement also. I mean, we're talking about maybe in marriages where there wasn't any sort of devastation that occurred. But let's say, I mean, so many of the more difficult and challenging situations
are
when somebody has been unfaithful, has had multiple affairs, has lied, has stolen, has done these things. And then the spouse that finally has had enough and wants to leave them has an inflated sense of entitlement that because he did all these things to me or she did all these things to me, therefore I can do A, B, C, and D, regardless of how it impacts the children, because it's somehow like he or she has lost the right to be a parent to the child. And those are the situations that I think your book could be amazingly helpful, is helping someone cross that bridge to be able to see, even in those situations, how valuable it is to put those feelings aside. And I don't necessarily think that you can always forgive someone if they're not acknowledging wrongdoing, mm-hmm. but at least leave that in the past and move forward in the present. What do you think about that?
I love what you're saying. I mean, I think that it is human nature to want to retaliate. That's why, you know, the Bible, the Ten Commandments, reminds us not to retaliate, you know, and to try to keep our impulses to ourselves. I mean, not that I'm a particularly religious person, but the impulse to do a lot of things, we wouldn't have 10 commandments that say, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal your neighbor's wife, unless this was human nature, right?
Sure, of course.
We wouldn't have to make laws and rules about it.
Right.
So once someone is divorced and when they're able to just keep the best interest of the child in the front of their mind, they need to know retaliation, that day is over. I need to, and if you can't forgive or let go, which sometimes you can't, you can still let it be.
So how do you...
I'm writing a new book now, and I'm using the expression let it be instead of let it go. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you're not ready to let it go. Why are you going to let it go when somebody was so dishonorable with you? But what you really... what a person might want to do is stretch into letting it be. This really did happen. It really did hurt me. But it's not. This is not what's happening now. What's happening now is my 11 or my 16 or my 4-year-old child is standing in front of me, and I'm about to like blast off my ex because he picked up the kids late, or he brought home dirty laundry, or he forgot about somebody's piano recital. And what's in the best interest of the child? That's the question, right?
Yes, yes. That sounds like the Beatles were definitely onto something when they said, let it be, huh? Okay.
Oh, gosh.
There you go, Holly.
Oh, yeah, I know. I think that, too. Right.
Right. Holly has a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry I broke in there a little, but I didn't want to lose my thought. So I'm wondering, with your vast experience, how you deal with it, because it sounds like what you're talking about from my frame of mind is finding a way not to personalize what your ex does to you, and a healthy way to create boundaries and maybe let go of that thing as ex-partners where you feel less than or taken advantage of.
And changing your expectations, basically.
Changing expectations, yeah, and creating boundaries. And I noticed, I'm reading some of your bio here, that you have this thing of a section about predictable pitfalls. Do you have any your suggestions around that, to expand on that? Because at the beginning stage,
one of the things, how do you create boundaries? You know, if we think about it, some people are so angry. I mean, both of you, you know, I've done workshops and somebody is bringing up what happened 20 years ago.
Right.
They really are. They are so angry. And what I've really learned is that for many people resist grieving. Mm-hmm. And instead, they get stuck in some kind of anger cycle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I really try to stress to people is that every marriage that ends is really a couple of things. One, there's always grief. People get married hoping it's going to last. People get married hoping there's going to be a future. And when this blows up, no matter which partner was the instigator, a dream is lost. A family is broken.
True.
And many people cannot grieve. They won't allow themselves to go there. They get stuck in a cycle of anger. And so as a therapist, I try to normalize, I guess that's the word that I really like, normalize, that being angry is covering something up. What would you really feel? You know, what do you really feel for the you who stood at your wedding day and made those vows and said,
yeah,
I do, I promise, I hope? What were the dreams? And really mourning those dreams is a way of helping people get more centered and begin to figure out how they're going to create the rest of their life and create better boundaries and not just wallow in a puddle of anger and remorse. I don't know if I really answered that question. But
absolutely. And, yeah, and one of the things that I encourage people to look at is that anger is primarily a secondary emotion, and it is used to cover up our more vulnerable feelings about something that gives us the illusion of being empowered. And in actuality, it just creates greater re-victimization. If the original assault or insult isn't actually occurring now, to stay angry is completely self-defeating because it has no value. It doesn't help to mobilize or change anything that isn't actually even occurring anymore. It's one thing to be angry when you find out that your spouse is cheating on you or has lied or stolen something from you. But if that behavior isn't occurring at this moment, then you have to deal with what are the other feelings that are under there. Mm-hmm. So I completely am on board with what you're talking about.
I love what you said. And I think what we know as therapists is sometimes saying things have to be said more than once. Just like people have to tell their story in order to mourn. Mm-hmm. Well, the therapist also has to say things more than once. And if anybody out in the listening audience like is thinking about your sister or a friend who's getting divorced and this person is really caught up and trapped in a cycle of anger, you know, you may need to listen to the anger and you may need to tell them, ask them, what's underneath? What's underneath? How do you feel for yourself when you see you who bought that wedding dress? Or, you know, it could be a man, you know, if it's you who stood there with that suit, gave your bride that ring, and how do you feel now? And how can you feel for that person and try to help them get in touch with the grief? Because I love what you said, that anger is a secondary emotion. Yeah. And the grief is the what they're trying to do is protect themselves from feeling that vulnerable, grieving.
I remember very clearly going through that, and I, underneath my grief, was that huge component of what I had really fallen in love with and needed in my life, which was that laughter that she had and the ability to take risks and jump into adventures, that spontaneity. And over the years, since I've known her, I've been able to incorporate some of that into my own personality. And then she's also taken the time. She thinks a little more deeply, maybe takes time to step back. And that, for me, has really been, I think, the healing part of it and what makes it such a fantastic thing to stick with.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You go.
I'm sorry.
Your turn.
I'm just very impressed because one of the steps that help people befriend their ex is recognizing that this person was not all bad and that they really had some wonderful traits. That's what actually drew you to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually still have that. Like a befriended ex is not the same thing as being married to the person. You can have a friendship with the person who you were once married to and now you're divorced from, and you can still hold on to those positive qualities that drew you to that person in the beginning.
And you don't have to take care of the negative ones that were difficult.
There you go. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Yesterday, somebody, I went on Facebook and somebody had posted a picture of an elderly couple. And the caption was something like this: how did you make it 65 years? And the answer was, we lived in a time when something was broken, you fixed it. We didn't just throw it away. And I was really upset at that answer because it implies that divorced people are careless. And they just threw it away. And that wasn't my experience. My ex and I really wanted to try to work it out. We went to counseling. We tried to communicate with each other, and we just came to the place finally that we said, we're not right for each other. And really, anybody who's been divorced knows that it is quite a painful experience. It's much more painful than I had ever imagined. I don't know about either of you. much more painful.
Horrible.
I mean, even though I created a very wonderful life afterwards, at the time, it was horrendous. It was very painful. And people tried to avoid the pain. They avoid the pain by being very busy, by running around and finding somebody new, and by being very angry and recounting these stories of what was wrong with this person. You know, when I got married the second time, I said to my husband, I said, first husband divorce, second husband murder. And that was my idea of shorthand. But I was never going to get divorced again. You like that one?
Yeah, very much.
I know. Like, I would never want to go through that again. It's really, really painful. It is easier and better to try to work it out. But, you know, as we said at the beginning of this show, divorce is still an epidemic. People aren't getting married later. People are not staying married. And divorce is a solution. And we need to help people figure out how to build new lives after divorce. You know, a divorced family is a new kind of family. What we've seen in the last decade is there are so many new kinds of families, right?
Of course, yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's not just, you know, husband, wife, two kids, and a picket fence. That family of the 1950s is goodbye.
Absolutely. You know, I think as you're talking, what is also occurring to me is that people often stay stuck in a marriage for a long time because of fear. And a lot of that fear was driven by some of the research that came out years ago that said, you know, divorce is harmful to children, avoid it at all costs. And the truth was that that was really a mishandling of all of that data, that the reality was it's not divorce that harms children. It's how the divorcing couple handles the divorce. And if they handle it well, the children, it's an adjustment for them. But we go through adjustments all the time, and that just builds resiliency. I mean, we don't say, oh my God, you can't go off to the military because you're going to damage your children, or you can't take a job and try a long distance relationship for a little while because you have children. But somehow the idea of divorce, which children don't even understand, that's a construct, it's a legal definition. They just care about where their things are going to be and if they're going to see mommy and daddy still. I think that's my experience. How about yours?
Absolutely. And Dr. Deborah, I love that you're bringing up that research of Judith Wallerstein. Because
I wasn't
going to
mention names, but that one's on you. Go ahead.
What'd you say? Wait, I missed it.
I wasn't going to mention names, but that one's on you.
I felt like that woman, I had nightmares about that research because I got divorced during that era.
Yeah.
And her research was really damning of divorced parents.
Yeah.
And that's right. What we know now is that what children need is two parents. And I guess my experience really was that in the beginning, I knew that children needed two parents. And even though I was very angry at my ex, I definitely did more than tolerated him. I respected him. But what was surprising was that over the years, I actually came to enjoy him and to depend on his point of view for what would happen with the kids and respect his point of view. And, you know, that's what I think children are smart. They know when parents are just faking it and mom and dad really hate each other and say awful things to the neighbors about the other person.
Right.
It's really important for parents to try to access a pathway to what you really did once respect about your ex. And what are the traits that your children want to look up to? Because kids want to look up to their parents. And even though there are probably people out there whose hearts are broken because their ex went and had an affair with somebody and it really was crushing, what that really means is that maybe the two of you shouldn't be married. But it doesn't mean that that person can't be a wonderful parent. And it's very hard for many people to put that together, that the person who cheated on you might really still be a wonderful parent.
Exactly.
Even when I say that sentence, doesn't it sound a little, I don't know, almost like incongruous, but it's not. It's true.
It does sound incongruous, but that's what good boundaries will do.
Yeah. I really want to take us in a slightly different direction because I think there are some people who would be listening that would be saying, oh, this is all great, but I have a husband, an ex-husband, who is alienating the children from me, or I have an ex-wife who's systematically attempting to destroy my relationship. Now, how would you suggest someone like that go through a process of trying to befriend their ex when really the ex is acting like an enemy?
Thank you for bringing that up because, I mean, honestly, this is not for everyone. If anybody out there has a spouse that's really trying to turn the kids against them, that's a very tragic story. And the solution is not for you just to be nicer, 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 and nicer. The solution really would be for you to try to pull that person aside and really talk to them and see if you can get them to in any way, shape, or form go into any kind of counseling or mediation or therapy and talk about the importance of children having two parents, that whatever this ex of yours might be holding against you, that's work they have to do internally. And if they can't or won't do it, it's a shame, but they're not a candidate for befriending. They're really not. So this is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. There are things that happen in life where people cannot really resolve it. What you need to tell your kids is, I'm sorry daddy is so angry, or I'm sorry mom is so angry that she's saying these things about me. You know, this must be so harmful for you. I love you. Dad and I couldn't get along, or mom and I couldn't get along, but you really have the right to two parents. And I'm sorry that you're hearing all these negative things about me. And the answer for you, the parent who's being slammed, is to try not to retaliate, to even say to your child, now, of course, this is easier if you have a child who's like 8 or 10 or older. Like, I'm not going to retaliate. Dad and I could spend the rest of our lives telling bad stories about each other, but that's bad for everyone. I'm not going to do that. I don't want you to have to bear the burden of all the bad stories. So everyone, you know, that's a good question that you asked. This is not for everyone.
Gotcha.
Everybody cannot be good friends with their ex. Have anything else to add?
I was just going to say, it's a great example of accepting what you cannot change and trying to work on what you can. But I liked what you were saying and how you would talk to the children, that you're actually, you're acknowledging what's so without bad-mouthing, without, you know, denigrating the person who's alienating you, and you're allowing room for the children to develop their own relationship with you, right? Hang on. If you just tuned in, we are listening to, we are here on the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. No Kelly. We have Holly sitting in, and we are speaking with our wonderful guest, Dr. Judith. Is it Ruske or Ruske?
It's Ruske.
Ruske, like Riske. Ruske Rabiner, who's talking to us about her book, Befriending Your Ex After Divorce, Making Life Better for You, Your Kids, and Your Ex. Here's a question that is actually a little bit personally relevant, because I experienced this when I was divorcing my daughter's father, that my family actually befriended him and kind of alienated me. And that was a very, very hurtful few years, because there was some things that they weren't aware of. I mean, the divorce happened for, I think, pretty good reason. We were much better at being exes and have been and have proven that than we were, because we pushed each other's buttons in a way, even after 2 years of therapy, was just not changing. So it was a good decision. But I speaking to people who also have that situation where, you know, their parents or their siblings actually maintain incredible contact and kind of don't really hear your own side of things. Do you have any recommendations for those situations?
I think that's so difficult. I've heard stories exactly like this. And again, you know, I'm a big one, and so are you, I'm sure, on recommending that people really try to sit down and find out, you know, why are you siding with my ex, and what is it that you're really critical of me about? And it feels like you have a lot of judgment towards me, and it's really hurting me. What is it you think I've done? Mm-hmm. Why is it? You know, you lose people. It is a very sad thing, but in divorce, usually what people lose is the opposite family, you know, their ex's family.
Right.
But yeah, people can, you lose their own family.
Yeah, it was
and
was as if they felt sorry for him. They were inviting him over to play pool, and that he was inviting him to the family dinners because, you know, I had moved on. I had someone else, so that I didn't get invited. It was like, wait a minute here. This is just not friendly. But I mean, I'm totally over it now, but it was a painful part of the process.
Well, a good question. Did you feel that you ever had a chance to present your side of the situation and actually tell family members, this is really hurtful to me? You know, why are you doing something that would be so hurtful to me?
I just hit the wrong button. Sorry, Judy. I overshot you there. I just hit the wrong button on the stage. I think I heard mostly what you said, but I think everything's copacetic here. Okay. Oh boy, I should just never do technology. It's just not my forte. Yes. So did I?
Mine either.
Hey, we do what we're good at, right? Which is talking to people and helping people heal.
I'm sitting here with my hands up, so I don't touch anything.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that's another thing that really life. Divorce is really, it's a trauma. Divorce is really, you know, after 9/11, living in New York, I really started studying trauma a lot. And they talk about big T and small T traumas, but every divorce has a lot of trauma in it. And people are very surprised at all the losses that they have to weather in order to go on. And it's a very sad thing when someone feels like their own family members are siding with their ex.
Yeah.
It's a big loss.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, like, as Deborah was talking, I guess we all, sometimes we just have to realize some things are just not going to work, and you have to pull yourself up, get it together, take care of business.
Some things are not going to work. Yeah. And one thing that really doesn't work is when marriages end because one person leaves the marriage because they're having an affair with someone else and they marry that person. Usually the spouse who was left is not very eager to become chummy with the new partner who has replaced them.
That's so true. It took you 30 years, Holly?
Yeah, well, she's married now, so. But I've known her for 30 years building a friendship. Now, maybe 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been so happy about it.
Right.
But I'm wondering, I don't mean to stop what you're saying, but I see here that your book mentions there's, you have 5 C's of befriended exes. Do you think it would be helpful for you to tell us what they are and maybe give some examples?
Yes.
Or you are on the way?
The 5 C's of befriended exes. So one of the things that exes need to do is communicate. And it would seem to me that communicating is at the heart of every relationship. Learning how to communicate with your ex, and this is really hard because usually people who are divorced try communicating. Mm-hmm. Most people who have, especially people who have children, do not divorce lightly, right?
Right.
They really don't divorce lightly, and they try to communicate. So how does somebody communicate? How do you get people to really be more resilient and get in the way, get on board with trying harder? And so one of the things I tell people all the time is the most important thing about communicating is listening. The most important thing is listening to what the other person says and not even speaking. Mm-hmm. So learning how to listen is really important. That's one thing. Another one of the C's is collaboration. That very often ex-spouses get into a situation thinking they can make decisions that do not involve the other person, so they'll just make whatever decision they want. But it's not true. Even a decision that about something that goes on in your own house. I'll give you a really simple example. I'm thinking of a couple where she was a vegetarian and he was a meat eater. So when the kids were, this couple had to come to an agreement, and they had to communicate about it, and they had to really endorse each other's lifestyle. Whatever happened when they were married is one thing, but now they are befriended. If they're going to be good exes to one another, the vegetarian has to say to the kids, when you're with dad and dad's serving meat, if you want to eat meat, this is your decision.
Right.
Right. And vice versa, the same thing. People have a very hard time doing all this. Mm. Another C, I don't know if this is one of the C's that's in my book, is calm. You know, you even notice how much energy the three of us have, and we've all got divorced a long time ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But kids benefit when adults are calm.
Exactly.
And one of the things I've learned, and I advise all my clients, is the best thing you can ever say to somebody when a question is asked that you can't answer is, let me think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a minute and think about it, rather than having to give an answer. Because kids are constantly testing parents and constantly wanting answers.
No.
So
is that true?
Being calm.
It's not true.
Just kidding.
What did you say?
I said, no, is that true? I love it.
Exactly.
Curiosity, though,
yeah.
It's amazing. Our little ones, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. So staying calm and pausing.
The next one, is there any? Do you have any comments about that? Because both of you have other examples from these things.
I just, especially, it sounds like you're talking about being honest about your feelings, respecting the other's opinion and lifestyle. For instance, when you made the meat and vegetarian example, and how powerful
mm-hmm.
these, just being calm and centered in these things are so powerful in having your children understand that it is not their job, nor do they need to worry about carrying the burden of your pain in this divorce, because
absolutely.
You are strong and you will do it.
Very, very well
yeah.
put.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay, so 4 and 5, we're on bated breath here.
4 is compassion. So I think developing compassion for yourself is the first step in expanding your capacity for compassion. You know, most people feel like failures when they get divorced.
True.
They pick the wrong person. I mean, if they're dropped by their spouse, that's not a good feeling. They feel like I've been rejected. How is this possible? I picked someone, we took these vows, and now I'm being thrown to the wayside. And they also can feel guilty. If I'm thinking of a woman who said to me, when I left my husband, I gave him everything. I felt so guilty. I felt, how's he going to make it? But she had met somebody else, and she wanted to be with this new person.
Mm-hmm.
And so she felt so guilty. And how can she feel compassion for herself? That it didn't work. It didn't work. She tried. She went to therapy. She tried fixing it. She tried communicating with him. She tried collaborating with him. It didn't work.
Yeah.
And so she gave away too much. And then she was very, very resentful that she had given so much away. She'd given him all the wedding gifts. She had given him all their house and all the furniture.
Oh.
It was really hard for her, exactly. And why did she do this? She did this because she felt guilty. She didn't really have compassion for herself. We are just human.
Mm-hmm.
We make mistakes. Marrying the wrong person is a mistake.
Boy, that
on the other
compassion
hand,
for oneself.
I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
I just said building compassion for oneself is a...
That's a lifelong effort sometimes
yeah, it's a tough
for many
one.
Of us. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And talking to kids about all this, you know, we're living in a world where kids learn about everything.
Wow.
I mean, kids know that there are all different kinds of families. And this brings me to the last C, and the last C is celebrate. That being able to celebrate with your ex, to celebrate your children, is such a wonderful thing for everybody.
That's
it's
beautiful.
So sad when
yeah.
kids had birthday party at dad's and then a birthday party at mom's.
Sure.
When kids are standing on the stage, whether they're in first grade giving a little singing concert or whether they're graduating from high school, and they look out in the audience, there's mom sitting with her family. There's dad on the other side of the auditorium sitting with his family. Kids have said to me in my office, I don't want this ceremony to end because who am I going to go to first?
Oh.
When I walk off stage, am I going to go to mom? Am I going to go to dad? If I go to dad, mom's going to be hurt. If I go to dad, you know, vice versa. And so figuring out how to celebrate the little moments and the big moments of triumph, it's something that's really important for parents to think about. That when your children get married, you want to both be there, right? And even if you feel angry at your ex, your child is probably going to want your ex to be there.
It sounds like what you're saying, if as parents, each can follow these steps you've outlined and really take care of themselves and the other, keep good boundaries, and make the children feel that sense of freedom with it and that they're not carrying that burden, then maybe when they come to that graduation, let's say, they won't have that feeling, or it'll only be a moment of thinking, who should I go to? But that feeling won't be something they're particularly cognizant of.
Right. I mean, parents have to really be grown-ups. You don't want your first grader to be standing on the, you know, to come out of school and, you know, to be standing on the stage and not know whether they should go to mom or dad because they're feeling so conflicted.
Yeah.
You don't want that. So how can you sort of get over yourself and think,
exactly.
even if this is a limited befriending, mm-hmm. we're going to do this because we want to all be able to go out for a meal afterwards, not to have the kid have to choose.
Absolutely. I think this really challenges some of the beliefs that we have about things that really can help make this process easier. Like sometimes people believe that, well, if I have a feeling, then it's going to rule my actions. Well, our feelings don't have to rule our actions at all.
No.
I remember having some very challenging feelings at times, you know, when my ex, you know, and his girlfriend, you know, she would have all this fun with my daughter. And for a minute I would be like, oh, I didn't get to have that much fun and all that. But what I would say instead is, oh my gosh, darling, that's awesome. I'm so glad you had a fantastic time. And then I may go cry in my own room for a minute. But, you know, allow that, you know, my feelings to not have to rule my actions. I think when people can really embrace that, then you change your expectations about what's actually possible in this process of divorcing and befriending your ex.
Well, I think that's a great example. And it reminds me of the time that my ex's girlfriend bought my daughter, she must have been 14 years old, a gorgeous, expensive silk blouse. And I thought, what? You know, my daughter, she throws all her clothes on the floor. What does she need this expensive silk blouse for? And I was really envious and jealous. I had a lot of not so nice feelings, and it was really my responsibility to control and contain those feelings and say to my daughter, what a beautiful blouse. Isn't that great? Let me see it. It looks so pretty on you. These are things that no one ever anticipates when they're getting divorced.
Mm-hmm. True.
But they're really part of the everyday drama. Did I say that little expression right?
You know what I mean?
All the drama.
Drama, yeah. Of course, of course.
Yeah.
And Dr. Judy, believe it or not, we are out of time. I can't believe it.
You're kidding me.
It's there. We're there. I know we didn't get to everything, but I definitely want to, you know, highlight your, you would have people contact you through your email, right? Which is
yes.
J, as
you can
in Judy.
Give my email address or if anybody writes you, yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
J-R and then Rabinor, Rabinor @gmail.com. And you are based in New York, and you do phone consultations, and you do psychotherapy for people in your office. And you have this fantastic book we have been hearing about today, which is Befriending Your Ex After Divorce, Making Life Better for You, Your Kids, and Your Ex. Where can people find your book?
They can find the book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores, probably on my website as well. My website is judithruskayrabinorphd.com. I'll repeat that, judithruskayrabinorphd.com. And there'll be links to both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And Deborah and Holly, it was so much fun having this conversation with you.
Yay, thank you. I had a good time. Thank you very much.
When is your next book coming out?
I don't know.
All right.
I'll let you know.
Let me know. I'll write a blurb for it, and we'll have you on the show.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Okey-doke. That's great.
Thank you so much, Dr. Judy. You've been a pleasure and so informative.
And thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, and next week we actually have Maggie Hadley West, who is a filmmaker who made a film called Sick to Death. I think it had a lot to do with a thyroid condition that she had. So we are very excited about that. Okay, so everybody, y'all have a great week. Love you.
I love you too.